Welcome to the Rennie Podcast, where we talk about the real estate market and the people connected by it. Our goal is to empower you to make informed decisions and provide context for the real estate world around you. We hope that with every episode, you will become a little more knowledgeable and a lot more curious.
Hi there, I'm Ryan Berlin, Rennie's head economist and vice president of intelligence, and I'm here with Ryan Wise, Rennie's market intelligence manager and lead analyst within our intelligence division. Mr. Wise, it's good to be back here with you.
Absolutely, thanks.
And with us today is Art Siroff, an advisor here at Rennie. Despite the challenging market conditions over the past couple of years, Art has gone about his business like it's business as usual. And in fact, he helped 8 buyers find a home to buy last month. Art has been an advisor for 10 years. He's been a Rennie leader since 2016 and a Medallion Club member since 2016 as well. So that's the top 10% of realtors in this market. He's been President's Club, which is the top 1% of realtors, since 2017. That's amazing stuff. Art, welcome back to the podcast. I believe you're our first 3-time guest.
That's the most important accolade, I think.
It is. It is. What's new with you?
Yeah, thanks all guys for inviting me here. Always happy to be here and share my insights about the market and talk about what's going on. Usually, every time when you invite me, we talk about expecting kids. kids this time. Yeah. But I hit one personal milestone this week. I just had my 500th transaction.
500?
Wow, 500th transaction. Exciting. Yeah. Congrats.
So thank you. So it's kind of, little thing.
That's amazing. Oh, that is a big thing. Yeah, over 10 years, that's huge.
Yeah, and a funny thing, even though we had like 2.5 years slow market, half of this transaction came in the past like 3.5 years.
So how did you do that?
I think the most important thing is just attitude. Basically, it's not the market who provides leads, clients, and sales to you. It's you who do that, right? So you have to find the way through, navigate through any market, whether it's high and busy like 2022, 2021, or slowest since like summer 22.
While things have been busy for you, Art, the market has been slow. We want to talk about the real estate market, resale and pre-sale today, and then also touch on the interest rate environment, as we often do now that we're 2 cuts into the Bank of Canada's easing of monetary policy. Let's start with the real estate market. I want to talk about pre-sale to start, because that's where you spend a lot of your time, Art.
A lot of this year, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This year. Well, typically.
Well, it's usually every year, but this year particularly, because like pretty much half of my transactions this year so far been pre-sales. Mm-hmm. So it's already like slightly over 20 pre-sales this year.
It's remarkable that your business has been so focused on pre-sale this year and that you're working with so many buyers, because it seems to me that buyers currently are sort of, they've been on the sidelines and they're not very committed to participating in the market right now, given where prices are and where interest rates are. So we'll talk a bit about that in a moment. I want to talk about the resale market first, where sales have continued to fall in recent months despite declining interest rates. Inventory has continued to rise. So there's more supply out there than we've seen in years. And prices have certainly plateaued at best. Mr. Wise, you've come armed with some data.
Yeah.
So why don't you provide us with some more precise insights into what's happening in our market?
Yeah, sure. I think that was pretty good sort of synopsis for market dynamics as they've been happening in first the resale market of late. July was, pretty similar to June. A lot of what we've talked about on this podcast the last few months, I think, has played out into July. So just to kind of summarize, it's relatively few buyers, more sellers or more would-be sellers. And that has manifested as, once again, below average sales, fewer sales year over year, above average new listings, more listings this year, and growing inventory. So if we throw some numbers at this, there's around 3,500 sales for this region, the Vancouver border and Fraser Valley board area combined. That's well below typical. So that's more than 20% below a typical July. New listings were just under 9,000. So that's much higher than last year. And that's way above what you typically see in a July, where not a lot of people typically like to list their homes in the summer. And this all leads to a situation where inventory expanded last month by about 3%, which is quite significant, because we really, you know, the sort of that typical seasonal pattern is inventory plateaus in the summer. We don't usually see a lot of growth on the inventory front through July. And I think, again, all of these factors that we're just describing really manifested in that way. So what we're seeing, fewer buyers, more sellers, and even across the region, if we look at every individual area that the boards characterize as MLS areas, every one of them has seen inventory growth over the past year, every single one, for a total of about a 45% increase year over year in inventory. And we should note, we're talking about July, so there's only been one rate cut in effect for pretty much the entire month of July. We got the second one sort of at the end of the month. And you know, as we said last month, that wasn't going to spur a ton of new demand. And so that's sort of the context for which we entered August.
Right. So that's the resale context. And it hasn't it's been sort of the data for July were similar to June and to May. Like, we've been in kind of a steady state, it feels like, for a few months now. So how does that translate to pre-sale activity? Because we know the resale market and the pre-sale market are linked. And maybe you can tell us a bit about that first.
Yeah. So I would say they're distinct segments of, call it, residential real estate in Metro Vancouver. But they're definitely linked. And I would say that pre-sale often follows resale. Resale is a larger part of our real estate market. It's where most of sort of the news about real estate come from. And so we often see that pre-sale kind of lags a little bit behind resale, but they follow very close dynamics. So we've seen a similar sort of decline in pre-sales overall. So we saw just under 6,000 pre-sales in the first half of the year, which, similar to resales, is well below average, about 29% below average. But we've seen a consistent share of sort of overall market sales. So if you sort of add the two segments up and you say, what is the share of pre-sales going over this year, and how does that compare to years past? It's pretty consistent. It's sort of in that low 20% of all transaction ranges. So what we've seen really is a pullback on the investor buyers in pre-sale, which are a huge segment in that segment of the market. And so, you know, if we look at all Rennie projects that we sell from in the past few years, it's always been right around 50% of all pre-sale buyers are investors. And so far, year to date, it's half that. Is about 25% of all pre-sale buyers are investors. And we're seeing that sort of investor squeeze we've talked about on this podcast in recent months. And I think that's really part of the story here. A big part of the story is that fewer investors are engaging with that pre-sale market today. And that's really kind of where I would like to start, sort of turn it to you, Art. Is, are you seeing that same thing, or who are your pre-sale buyers, and what's different about them from, say, the broader market?
Yeah, if you're talking just purely pre-sale market, surprisingly, it's mainly investors, because, again, I think it all depends how you position product to your customers, basically, right? For me, pre-sale is opportunity for my clients where they can mitigate the risk of high interest rate, unpredictable market, prices falling down or plateau for another year or so. So if you get something that's going to be complete in like 3-4 years at the current lower price, like, there is a very high chance that you're going to be a winner at the end. And additionally, they're always like, it's very complicated topic about investment, right? So right now, buyers have very low confidence in the market, because they've been like struggling for the past few years with higher interest rates, all these new regulations and rules that just make it just harder to be investor, right? So that's why I guess what you says about like people buying mainly for as primary homes, 100%, just because it's people have to live somewhere and this opportunity where they can afford to buy something, because right now it's actually quite unique opportunity that we haven't seen, most likely like never, or at least not in the past 10 years or so. You can buy pre-sale at similar price to resale, and you in most cases may need to put less money than you have to put otherwise. Plus, you don't need to pay strata fees, interest rates, and so on, right? So less cost.
So you mentioned putting down less money now. So we've been hearing a lot about how staggered deposits and lowered deposits are a big thing in the market. Is that something that really appeals to your buyers?
Yeah, 100%. So especially, I'd say like about 70% of my buyers are investors. And if you run the numbers, return on investment is substantially higher when initial investment lower, right? So we've never seen in the past like high rise with completion like 4 or 5 years with 10% deposit.
Right.
Now it's possible. Mm-hmm. And like before, to buy a pre-sale, you have to have like at least 100,000 like entry level home. Now you can get something decent even with like 50,000.
That's a good point. 100,000 is 20% down on a $500,000 home.
When we talk about deposits and deposit structure, Art, can you tell us a bit more about how that works?
Yeah, of course. So depending on the project, of course, right now you have opportunities to put, say, 15%. Usually it's 5% at writing, 5% maybe with 6 or 9 months, and the last 5% like 6 to another 9 months after that. So they're stretching the deposit a year, year and a half, while in the past it used to be like 20% was normal. Sometimes developers ask for 25% or in some cases even 30%. And they tend to be paid sooner, like gaps between deposits were about like 3 to 6 months. While now there are some projects, like there is a project in Surrey where you can get 2.5%, 4 installments of 2.5% within 2 years. There are some, again, this is another thing, when you get this experience in pre-sale market, you can actually find the ways how you actually can even reduce it, because it used to be like prohibited topic asking for less deposit. Usually people just try to negotiate the price or like upgrades or something. While for me, I'm trying to see if it's possible to put less money, right? So, and in many cases, developer agree.
Would you say that your investor buyers are really looking long-term? They have a strong belief in this market long-term and they're looking to, whether it's put less down or not lock into today's rates, but they still have a long-term view of this market.
Yeah, so most investors, they trying to buy something that's going to be completed in longer period of time. So it could be like 3 to 5 years. Again, if you look at the stats, right now, we're kind of somewhere in the bottom and the beginning potentially of next market cycle, which hopefully will start in the fall. So, and there is great chance that we're going to see this huge price appreciation.
Yeah, I was curious with, you know, we look at pre-sales across Metro Vancouver through the first half of the year being almost 30% below average, yet, you know, you are having a lot of success working with buyers in pre-sale. I'm just curious if you can maybe share some insights into the mindset of these buyers and what they're looking for, what they're concerned about, and what they're sort of, what options are weighing. Because of course, when people have money to invest, it doesn't have to go into real estate, right? They can invest into other vehicles that aren't as complicated or don't have as many variables, right? So I'm just curious, who are these buyers that you're working with?
Yeah, so most of my clients are simple people. Most of my pre-sales, like I don't have pretty much anybody who bought investment property, like say over $1 million. Most of them going to be like more or less entry-level homes, like 500,000 to 600,000. And that's another thing that I think this is an investment that actually going to work as investments, because doesn't matter how low the interest rate going to be again, it's going to be very hard to cover the cost of expensive properties. And it's again based on my experience already, so it's very likely to have successful investment in terms of like it's cover, like rent is covering all your expenses, maybe even some positive cash flow, easier to find tenants, higher turnover, which is actually good in terms of you can increase the rent every time the tenant moves out, on like studios and one bedrooms than two bedrooms and townhouses, because that's where people move in and may stay for 10 years.
Right.
So, yeah. And in terms of why they're deciding to buy, in many cases, actually, it's me who offers them this opportunity and shows them this is a time. Like, it's very unlikely that you're going to get a call from a potential client saying that I want to buy a pre-sale. You need to bring this idea to them, show them why it actually makes sense. And the stats that you're saying, that's 30% less sales and why I had such a good success, I think they correlated because less competition, more potential for better deals. Sales managers are very nice to you and want to work with you and want to get business done instead of just following the own principle and rules that usually when it's busy market, it's very hard to build any relationship with anybody in the sales team, especially if it's not our own project, right?
So, and they're working with the salespeople are working for the developers selling the homes in these projects.
Yeah. And now when you can, without any rush, to build a little relationship with them that actually help your clients in long run when you bring one client, the second one, and on the third or fifth, they're way more willing to give you like better deals.
Yeah.
Buyers incentives nowadays may vary anywhere from really good discounts. And there are some tremendous deals. Like, I'm not sure even if I allowed to say that there are some projects where you can get nearly 20% discounts.
20% discounts.
Almost 20% discount. So
which projects?
I'll tell you after the podcast.
Careful.
Yeah. So, and that's another thing, like importance of working with somebody who understands pre-sales and have experience and know where to bring the client, because very often when somebody wants to buy pre-sale, they want something that they want to live in themselves. Let's say they live in Vancouver and they want downtown, which is, I would say, maybe the worst investment right now in terms of pre-sale because it's so expensive.
Right.
You start showing them those opportunities that are going to work way better, and they may end up buying Coquitlam, Surrey, Brentwood. It all depends actually on the project, then the location, because within the same location, there are going to be some absolutely like great investment and the worst investment that you can even imagine, right? So yeah, price incentives like discounts, maybe GST included, lower deposits, upgrades, parking, storage, all of these make selling process easier and make the clients happier.
Do the to what extent do building amenities factor into the decision-making process for buyers, whether they're intending to live in the unit or they're intending to rent it out?
For investors, it has very little incentive. I mean, like, it's good to have smart amenities in terms of like amenities that people actually going to use and appreciate.
Like what?
Like nowadays, what I notice, a lot of people appreciate when there is kind of co-working space, for example, a space where you can go down and work in like somewhat working environment, not sitting on the couch right at home. Decent gyms. That's what make people more interested in the project. So you basically don't need to have membership somewhere else and you have everything what you need for regular workouts right downstairs. Very few people asking about like swimming pools or things like that. People still scared of maintenance.
Do the rooftop patios move the needle at all? Because I always wonder about that, the communal rooftop area where you can hang out and barbecue. I see that a lot, but I don't know if that actually is seen as a real benefit.
I wouldn't say that this is a place that people actually tend to go and sit and enjoy, because if it without like hot tubs, common barbecue and lounges and things like that, just sitting area, like why would you go and stay on the wind? even in the nice weather, it's not going to be actually warm there because it's very windy on somewhere on 40th floor, right? So but they look nice.
It's like it's like balconies. Like everyone says they want one, but not everyone uses them, right?
Yeah. Gyms are like that too.
That's true. That's true. Well, speak for yourself, right?
Well, when it's a nice gym, people are using it. When it's just like a few things in it, of course, like why would you even go there, right? The waste of time.
Right.
Okay, let's switch gears here. We mentioned earlier how last month, really, the second rate cut by the Bank of Canada was not a factor in the market because it happened at the end of July. So here we are as of recording in mid-August. We've had two rate cuts from the Bank of Canada. Their policy rate is down to 4.5%. We've chatted about where we expect rates to go through the balance of the year, but let's quickly take stock of where everything is. There's been a lot of activity in the stock market and bond yields, and that will impact fixed mortgage rates, what the Bank of Canada is doing, what the Federal Reserve is doing. So Ryan Berlin, why don't you tell us sort of where are we on sort of all of these things, and where do you see us going in the near term, and what does that mean for our market?
What a simple question.
Yeah.
What an easy one.
Just 7 quick answers.
Right. So, you know, as you said, the Bank of Canada has now dropped its policy interest rate from 5% to 4.5% over the last couple of months. We haven't really seen that decrease manifest in any positive form, if you will, in the market in terms of buyers leaping back in. Doesn't increase purchasing power a whole lot. You know, every quarter point cut increases purchasing power by about 2%. So it's not a big dial mover. I think where we will see, and we've talked about this before, where we'll see a real impact of lower interest rates is in the medium and the longer term. So we've seen 2 25 basis point cuts so far this year. At the beginning of this year, Rennie, ourselves, we were saying we expected 4 25 basis point cuts. So we expected the bank's rate to go from 5% to 4% by the end of this year. And some people said, wow, that seems like an aggressive forecast. Here we are today, and we have some of the big banks even forecasting 5 total cuts for a total decline of 1.25 percentage points on the part of the bank by the end of the year. And then through the balance of 2025, we expect another 100 basis points as the bank moves back into their neutral range of a range that they have identified as being between 2.25 and 3.25%. So we call the midpoint is 2.75. So that would be another 7 quarter point cuts. And I think that that's reasonable to expect at this point, given how the economy is performing. We've talked a lot about it on this podcast, the labor market in particular. Most recently, the unemployment rate nationally is at 6.4%. Hasn't changed month over month, but we've seen employment drop marginally. The labor force participation rate is the lowest it's been in, right, 20 years?
More. So if you exclude COVID, 2020 and 2021, labor force participation in Canada is at its lowest point since 1998.
There you go.
And so just to kind of add on that for a sec, we lost jobs last month, but we also lost unemployed people as population grew, which is really weird. There were more people not working, but there were fewer unemployed people per the Stats Canada definition because so many people left the labor force. So they're not counted. And that's why labor force participation declined.
Which is really concerning because when people do leave the labor force, we've talked about this. I mean, some are retiring, so that's fine. That's a consequence of demographics and aging. But we now have people, as you said, the discouraged workers, mm-hmm. the younger workers in particular, who are leaving the labor force because they just literally cannot find work.
And so what that means is that they just stopped looking for work last month. They can't find a job and they're discouraged. And that's problematic.
So this all of this points to, you know, or is indicative of a softening economy. We've got a lower Bank of Canada interest rate, and we expect in early September another cut. September 4th is the next meeting, but we're also seeing bond yields, which strongly influence fixed mortgage rates, come down. And I think the latest that we've seen, they are sub 3%. And so that is down significantly over the past month and 3 months. And we're now hearing that some of the big banks are looking to cut their fixed rates, both for 3-year and 5-year terms, which is good news for buyers. For sure. It makes homes, all else being equal, more affordable. But Art, we had talked previously about what is impacting the psyche of buyers in this market. And you actually said that it isn't interest rates or prices mostly. Like, obviously that comes into play, but you said there's some other factors that are influencing how people are looking at the market and when they're deciding to participate.
Yeah, which is quite interesting because it's actually first time in my career, like 11 years career, that actually stats doesn't actually work on proving clients that actually it's a good time to buy.
Don't say that to us.
I know, I'm sorry. But a funny thing is that there's always like numbers and there's like, I don't know, emotional part of the market,
yeah,
which actually have way more significant impact on the buyer's decision right now. So first of all, the financial stability at the moment affects the decision way more than if the interest rate went down by 0.25% or the home that they could buy 6 months ago, 50,000 cheaper now. For them, what's important is that like they are in the position where if they're buying, they can't comfortably bearing all the expenses, whether it's like rates still, yeah, you can get 4.99 for unsecured mortgage mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. like 4.7 something for secured mortgage, sometimes even a bit less than that. But it's still, it's not 2%, it's not 3%, yeah, right? So it's still quite significant expense every month. Most buyers that I notice buying for, especially resale, buying primary homes, less investors, and all of them have some specific reason for that, whether they need bigger place, whether they need extra space, are they downsizing?
Or they had another kid.
Have another kid, or the kid is moving out and the kid needs a place, right? So yeah, there are like all these life events that actually affecting the buyer's decision. And if they're in the position where like they want to buy, but they don't really have to, and they can stay at the place for another year or so, they, in most cases, they prefer just to stay mm-hmm. status quo and don't risk, because again, we expecting the rates going down, mm-hmm. but as you know, like until you people see it and see the urgency on the market and that the market getting active, everybody's going to get pretty scared what may happen next, right? So
yeah, we've talked about this sort of you know, buyers being once bitten twice shy after what happened last summer,
spring and summer,
where we had the Bank of Canada hold for a number of consecutive meetings, hold the interest rate. And I think people got comfortable with that and thought that that was probably the peak.
We had a pretty strong spring market of a lot of sales. It was busy.
Yeah. The multiple offers, the prices went up. Yeah.
And then the bank came in consecutive months in the summer and increased by 25 points and 25 points. And that kind of put the kibosh on any momentum that was gathering in the market. And since then, I think people have been very, very hesitant. I do think that, you know, as we look ahead, we've had two rate cuts. We've seen variable rate mortgages and the prime rate come down in lockstep. We've seen fixed rate mortgages come down in line with bond yields coming down, with the expectation of inflation being lower, because inflation has been under control this year. And I think markets are now starting to price that in to be a permanent feature going forward.
And but I would just add that everything else we're watching, whether it's the labor market data we just talked about or retail sales, job vacancies, like they're all pointing to a pretty soft economy. And we're starting to see more evidence of that in the US too, which matters a bit less, but it still really impacts whether it's bond yields or, you know, the Bank of Canada not wanting to be too much lower than the Federal Reserve, things like that. So I think all the data releases that we've seen over the last while have really pointed in the same direction, which is a soft economy that needs less restrictive monetary policy.
Absolutely. I think that's coming. We'll see that come, and it will really sort of, the momentum will accumulate over the course of the next 18 months, but it's going to be a slow burn. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to change overnight. So something to look forward to, I think. But if you are in the market today looking to buy, it might be a good time to jump in.
Well, it's actually not only might be, I think it would be one of the best time in years, just because there's always seasonality. And in the summer, it's actually the best time for buyers, because they're like, doesn't matter which year we take, it's going to be always more inventory, less mm-hmm. sales, less competition, and you can actually go choose really good deal. In some cases, you can buy something at the moment for the prices like from 2020, 2019.
Well, that's what I was going to say too. Like to that point, we have more inventory now. So in other words, buyers have more choice than they've had in 5 years.
Yeah. And to your point, Art, it always, almost always peaks in the summer. So we see the highest inventory levels every year in the summer months.
Yeah, like, and usually the fall, usually the busiest months. So hopefully it's going to happen this year as well, when maybe we're going to get another rate cut in September or October, which going to actually coincidence with the fall market.
Mm-hmm. usually a bump there in sales. So anyway, Ryan Wise has guaranteed rate cuts through the balance of this year. So we have that to look forward to. All right, let's move on to the next segment of the podcast, which is Beneath the Headlines. This is where we cherry pick a housing-related news story that would benefit from a little more context. Mr. Wise, you have found such a headline.
I have one, and it's not quite housing-related, but it's economy, financial, and
it's close enough,
a headline that I really wanted to use. So Canadian consumer insolvencies saw one of their worst months ever, and ever is in all caps.
It's very dramatic.
Yeah, it is. And so when you look, would you be surprised to know that consumer insolvencies were down month to month? And
they were I think that's lower obvious from the headlines.
Last month than the month before. And they're much less than, say, in 2009 when the global financial crisis was on. So it's one of those, not to pick on the outlet too much, but I think, once again, insolvencies are up, just like mortgage delinquencies are up. So the number of people behind on their mortgages, it's higher than it was previously, say earlier in the pandemic. But these numbers are not skyrocketing. People are not going bankrupt in any great numbers, contrary to what the headlines might have you believe.
Right. Yeah, that is definitely, it feels very clickbaity. I mean, it does speak to this underlying issue of higher interest rates squeezing households. And also, not just higher interest rates, I should say higher prices. I mean, inflation, even though it has slowed, prices are higher today than they've ever been before. And they rose really, really quickly for a period over the past couple of years. So I think that, you know, we are starting to see the consequences of that at the margin when we look at insolvencies or consumer bankruptcies, or we look at mortgage arrears, which have started to tick back up. And I know that's made some news as well. Or made some headlines, I should say, but we're still looking at mortgage arrears. These are homeowners who have a mortgage who are 3 or more months behind on their payments. It's still in the range of 1.5 to 2 households per 1,000.
And I would add that's 2019 levels. So that's how many people were behind in 2019 when things were fine and the market was, quote unquote, more normal.
So it seems like the author of this article was a little excited when they wrote it, but I think it is something to keep an eye on as we are, you know, as we look at how the economy is evolving against this backdrop of higher prices generally, higher borrowing costs. There are going to be some adjustments, and that will then influence Bank of Canada monetary policy. So that's really why, like in a housing market context, why we care about these things. So something definitely to keep an eye on, but nothing to become alarmed at this point.
Or write in all caps about.
Yeah, we don't need all caps, not quite yet. We want to finish with a question from one of our listeners, Janelle, and here's her question.
Hi, Rennie Podcast. My name's Janelle, and I'm in the process of looking for a pre-sale property as an investment. Where would you recommend looking, and is there any room for negotiating in today's market?
Ooh, good question. That one, Art, I think you should jump on that.
Yeah, it is a great question, and it's not a simple question in terms of there is no one answer that's going to fit everybody. Investment properties can vary a lot, depending on what you're looking for and depending on the budget. If you're looking for something that going to carry the cost and potentially increase in the market value over the time it's building, I would say there are some projects in Surrey Centre that are going to work really well, especially the homes that are more affordable, like studios. And there are some projects where you can get a studio under $400,000. And the rental rate is already $2,000. So even at the high interest rate as right now, it can cover all the expenses.
And that's rare.
It's extremely rare at the current situation. Yeah. And basically the price wise, it's similar price to resale homes, which is already like a few years old. And by the time the project is completed, it kind of going to be outdated while you're getting a brand new home at the low price. So yeah, it's one of the options to look at. Another one, if you have like bigger budget and looking more in terms of have greater price appreciation, There are some really nice assignments where you can get actually below their purchase price a few years ago. So if you're looking for steals, that would be one of the options, or developers that selling their nearly completed project, where they can, as I mentioned before, you can get somewhere around 20% discount, which is like cheaper than anybody who bought in this project or anywhere else similar product in the area.
So those, yeah, those sound like really good opportunities. Maybe not the easiest to access for the average buyer, but that's where you as an advisor comes into play, right?
Yeah, they should call me.
But there's, I mean, that's a good point, because assignments generally don't get listed, say, on MLS. No. Most people don't know where to look to find them, and the right advisor can certainly help you with that.
Yeah, and it's not only assignments, even pre-sales. Sometimes what you get when you go to the presentation center underrepresented is different from what you can get if you're working with agent who already done multiple deals at this project or with this developer. So there are some perks with working with agents.
So on that, I think this is a good place to wrap up. And before we do, just want to say, Art, thank you so much for joining us once again. Mm-hmm. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Enjoy the conversation a lot. If any of our listeners wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Yeah, of course. Easiest way, obviously, is a phone number, 778-223-0033, or in my email, aseroff@reni.com. Or you can find me on the social media.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Art. Fantastic to have you.
Yeah, thanks all guys for inviting. Looking forward for the fourth one.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us on the Reni podcast. If you'd like to learn more, all resources mentioned in the episode can be found at reni.com/intelligence. To be the first to receive this information, register for intelligence updates.